This is a CNA podcast.
Hello again, I'm Stephen Chia, and welcome to another episode of Heart of the Matter. Cancer. It's the one disease many of us fear. And numbers from the Singapore Cancer Registry show that one out of four of us may develop cancer in our lifetime. Now that is a very scary thought. The good news is that once treated, many do recover, but at what financial cost? In a bid to help curb the cost of cancer, the Singapore government recently announced a list of the most cost-effective cancer drugs which can be claimed using one's basic health insurance policy, MediShield Life. Yet several politicians raise concerns that we are still paying too much, mostly to insure ourselves. So are we really paying too much? Is our insurance coverage adequate for what we pay? Should I be covering myself for all types of cancer? And what happens if I don't have enough insurance? With me to discuss this topic today are Associate Professor Ravindran Kanasavaran, a consultant at the National Cancer Centre, also chairperson of the Cancer Treatment Fund Committee at Singapore Cancer Society.
Great to be on the show, Stephen.
Evelyn Goh, she is the Deputy CEO and Chief Advisory Officer of Provident, a wealth advisory firm.
Hello, everyone.
And Gina Ho, a 43-year-old general manager, a mother of three teenagers, and last year she was diagnosed with stage 2 thyroid cancer.
Hi, everyone. Nice to meet with everyone and discuss this topic together.
Okay, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, Gina, if I can invite you to start with your story, because last year you discovered that you had thyroid cancer, which we're glad to hear is in remission now. And while distressed by that, you also found it quite difficult to navigate the healthcare system, right?
So if I may just start by sharing, last year in June, I actually had a comprehensive health screening that was compliments from my company. I've always passed my thyroid blood test well, even though my neck was slightly puffy. With this health screening, I was able to go for a thyroid ultrasound. And it was at the ultrasound that they started to discover there were some microcalcifications and it looked a little suspicious. That's when the doctor who was reviewing me actually told me to probe this further, go for further investigations immediately. So like any people my age, first of all, I was struck with fear. I remembered crying so much at the MRT station when I received the news. Instead of going to a doctor straight, I took some time to find out who are some of the prominent doctors that I should visit because of work schedule as well. I further procrastinated until September when, at the recommendation of one of my friends who was a GP, probably I should go to NUH. Now, why NUH? Because at that time, I was also thinking cancer is something that is long-term. I may need more support financially in the long run in the events that I'm not able to support myself. And that's why I have shortlisted this doctor. He did a FNAC, a fine needle aspiration test, as a biopsy. Indeed, 1 week later, it turned out to be cancerous, malignant. And that's when he said, let's schedule for the operation.
It must have been devastating to hear the news at the time. What were some of the other considerations? You mentioned you were a bit concerned about the finances too.
Yes, because at that point in time, it was also quite timely that the government announced that they are going to review the medicine list. There were a lot of rumors and uncertainty going along in the entire general population that, oh no, it means to say that insurance premiums are going to increase. What if the cancer drugs that we are going to be prescribed is not on the list? So first thing first, I have three teenagers who will be going to university, who will be going to polytechnic, and one more who is in secondary school. So financial-wise, it was definitely a challenge for me to quickly review what are my existing policies, the coverage, if I would be able to manage cash up front to pay for the medicine.
And at the end of it, can you tell us roughly how much did you spend on treatment?
I would say that the latest radioactive iodine treatment that I went for was around $10,000 to $12,000. I'm still waiting for my bill, but that was the estimated amount that I was given. And that was just on the treatment.
And is your insurance going to cover most of that?
Yes, it will be covered by my insurance provider. And I'm grateful I will be sufficiently covered.
So you're not alone. I'm sure any person, any parent and adult would have the same concerns as you. Prof. Ravi, the journey that Gina has just mentioned, is this a typical journey of someone when they discover that they have cancer?
Yes, Stephen. And Gina, I'm glad you're much better now. You're on your recovery phase right now, which is great because you found the cancer early. You rightly mentioned, Stephen, this is quite a common experience for many of my cancer patients as well. They go through the whole gamut of emotional upheaval and then up to a point when eventually they'll come to terms with it. And this can take weeks and months. And that's why sometimes there may be some delay between the time where the diagnosis may present itself to the point where patients get the courage to go and get treatment, because it's a taboo topic. Like, a lot of people don't want to discuss cancer. They associate it with death and suffering. However, over the course of the last maybe two decades, there have been milestones in terms of improvement in cancer care. So it's not as what people had imagined it from movies of the past, where you lose your hair, you suffer more than benefit from the treatment. And as such, people actually have the impression that you'll die faster from treatment, which is not true. And from Gina's experience herself, she knows that you can get cured and potentially lead a relatively normal life thereafter. So answering your question, yes, they go through such concerns about cost, about side effects, about survival, mortality becomes something very real to them.
It almost makes you take a second look at your life itself. The Heart of the Matter team also spoke to another patient, Eileen Hua. She's 48. She's had cancer twice, once when she was 25 and again when she was 44. Her biggest issue was insurance. Now, the first time she was too young. The second time she had a hard time being insured. I just want to share with you a clip of her interview. Let's listen to this.
Okay, if you ask me, definitely not, because I'm that kind of person that is, when I was 17 years old, I started working. First thing when I come out, I get my pay. I'm the one who look for insurance agent, not insurance agent look for me. At that time, of course, my pay is so little, I buy what I can do. So I buy life insurance, but I did not buy in hospitalization. Because at that time, I'm young and a lot of things we don't know. I thought that, oh, I have MediSave. I don't need to buy any hospitalization.
So Evelyn, I'm going to put this question to you, because many young people do think like her. I'm young, I'm healthy, nothing much to worry about, and I don't have much money to spend on insurance. Or rather, I'd rather not at this point, right? You think you don't need it. So when something hits, it really hits hard for this group of people. What could Eileen sort of have done differently?
Well, unfortunately, you know, insurance are a lot of times being sold rather than bought. People tend to not want to kind of like, oh, I want to buy insurance. Our first policies tend to be sold to us, right, by either a friend who has gone into the insurance industry or someone we know. And in her case, like she mentioned, she bought whole life insurance rather than medical insurance, which 20 over years ago when we first started, that's the plan that we tell young people, if there's only one plan you need to buy, it's a medical insurance. If there's a plan that parents need to buy for their children, it's a medical insurance. Because that's the plan that you need to have for life, in that sense, because the medical expenses, medical incidents can happen, whether you're young, you're old. So that's really the most important plan, I would say, for all listeners out there. If you do not have a medical insurance, that is really the one plan that you want to ensure that you have.
So is that still the same today? If a young person came to you, that would be your advice?
Yes.
Which one to get first?
Whether young or old, must have a medical insurance.
But then many Singaporeans may say, but I have my MediShield Life, which is sort of given to all of us. Isn't that enough?
Whether that's enough or not is really a function of what's your healthcare expectations. If you're happy going to see what at a restructured hospital, no aircon, no TV, you know, shared bathrooms and all that, then that's fine. But if you want something that is more conducive for yourself, you want to have aircon, you want to perhaps choose your doctor, then I would say you will need to upgrade. You have to buy additional insurance, right, beyond just the MediShield Life.
And Gina, when you were considering options and doctors and medical care, was cost an issue? Did you filter out some options because you felt they were too expensive?
As a general Singaporean, also a bit auntie, I go around asking my friends who are fellow mummies, first of all, to tap on their knowledge. Number two, I consulted friends of my age who are cancer patients, unfortunately. After making a comparison, I thought to myself, end of the day, I want to be able to afford the treatment in a comfortable setting So I already have a P-plus plan from my insurance provider. So that would cater for me for a private hospital. However, if I'm not able to have a secure income at the end of the day, if there are any financial challenges that comes along the way, would I be able to afford private class? So that was definitely one key consideration that I had when I was considering which doctor that I will ultimately go to, which hospital I should entrust my care upon.
When you say P+, you mean you have a rider over and above your basic policy, is that right?
I mean to say that I have the coverage to cover me up to a private class. So unfortunately, at that point in time, I didn't have the foresight to buy riders. So that was where the 10% of co-payment actually comes in. But it worked out well because at the end of the day, I'm still able to cover that 10% cost by myself. And with the hospitalization plan, which was very comprehensive, I would say that the cash upfront is actually a comfortable sum, even though I'm going for a private class in a restructured hospital.
It managed to cover a large portion of the cost that you were required to pay. Prof Ravi, I mean, you head the Cancer Treatment Fund Committee at Singapore Cancer Society. Give us some idea, what is the current landscape when it comes to costs? Are most people covered like Gina, or are many in a situation where they end up needing extra help?
Prior to September 1st last year, when the cancer drug list first came into the picture, there were many gaps. A lot of drugs did not get reimbursement from the government. The government reimbursement was fixed at 3,000 per month for MediShield Life and 1,002 from your MediSafe. So if drugs cost more than 4,200, patients had to fork it out of their pocket unless they had integrated plans with or without riders that will cover the balance. So your copay will depend on whether you have a rider or not. Now, after September 1st, the government negotiated prices with pharmaceutical companies to bring down cancer drug costs substantially. You're talking about drug cost reduction from 30 to 60%, 65% for some of the drugs.
Sorry, are you saying 65% less than what it used to be?
Yes.
Wow.
So with that savings, the government has now channeled the savings to fund drugs that they didn't fund in the past. So meaning to say, if you do not have a high income, and we use the per capita household income as the threshold, and that threshold is 6,500 per capita household income, not the individual's income. If you're talking about a family of three or four and one person earning an income, many people would qualify for MAF, Medication Assistance Fund support. And when you get Medication Assistance Fund support, these drugs are literally $0 out of pocket. And we're talking about really expensive drugs that are immunotherapies, state-of-the-art drugs. Just to give you some background, Cancer Treatment Fund is basically for patients who don't have financial support or insufficient financial support to pay for their cancer drugs. And we use means testing to see whether they're eligible. So basically, it's for low and low-middle-income patients who will qualify for this fund. And it used to cover for drugs in excess of that 4,200 support that the government had provided prior to this. So we had many, many applications. Now, many of those patients are getting Medication Assistance Fund support now. They're getting subsidized drugs because of how the government has channeled the savings to support these patients. So now we don't have that many applications for those drugs. So more than 90% of drugs that we had used in the past are part of the cancer drug list. But that leaves a small percentage that is not part of the cancer drug list that may be beneficial. So it's not just about cost-effective care. When the government evaluates these things, they look at evidence-based as well. So it must be effective and cost-effective. Those patients now have a gap, and Cancer Treatment Fund can help.
So in a way, you're saying the most commonly prescribed drugs have become much cheaper and therefore a lot more accessible to a larger group of people. But if you're unfortunate enough to have one of those more rare cancers, then you may not benefit from that, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's actually a good thing. Overall, we're making it more accessible to more people. Is it the drugs that are really expensive? What about the treatment itself too? Is cancer treatment, would you say, very expensive in Singapore?
Basically, cancer treatment can be surgery, can be systemic therapy, which is chemotherapy. Now we have targeted treatment, immunotherapy, and it can be radiotherapy. Of course, at the tail end, you get palliative therapy, supportive care drugs. Overall, the cost of surgery in public hospitals in general, it's pretty much well controlled in terms of pricing, and it's relatively affordable because the government controls pricing across all public hospitals. So you don't have to hospital shop to get the cheapest surgery somewhere as a subsidized patient. So I'm talking to you from a point of a Singaporean, even a PR will get some subsidies, but mainly from a Singaporean's perspective, you actually get high quality care at very reasonable cost. So like as what Gina mentioned, if you're concerned, you're not sure about your insurance coverage, and you're willing to get C or B2 class treatment, you'll get very reasonably priced treatment. Now, the elephant in the room always has been the systemic therapy part, because these drugs are controlled by pharmaceutical companies that sell these drugs to us. And it's always been priced according to the country's GDP. So high-income countries pay a lot more for these drugs than lower middle-income countries. However, when the Ministry of Health looked at pricing in other high-income countries, Singapore was paying proportionally higher sum compared to countries like Korea and Japan. Of course, you can argue that they had larger population compared to Singapore, you know, a smaller market. But we were paying significantly higher, and that led to these negotiations about cancer drug cost. But your question also hits to the point about the value, right? How would you value these drugs? They're very expensive, but you know, to an individual with cancer, you would value it highly if it's going to prolong your life even by a month or 2 months. So I think while society may value it differently, especially when you don't have cancer, for their patients, for their families, every single day matters. So I think wherever we can try to curtail spiraling costs, do these negotiations, bring down prices, and try to get the best value out of it, then I think we are doing good already.
Most definitely. I think nobody ever wants to not take up a certain treatment option because they cannot afford it. That would be the most sad thing for them.
Hello everyone, my name is Crispina.
And I'm Adrian.
And we're the hosts of a podcast called Work It.
If you've never heard of it, well, it's a good time to tap in.
In the last 20 episodes, we've discussed topics like how to negotiate for a salary increase.
Or how to get along with younger colleagues who have different values from you, which incidentally is our top performing episode.
If work consumes your life and you want some perspective on issues like management, stress, even office romance, this podcast should be on your list. A new episode drops every Monday.
Catch us on the CNA app or wherever you get your podcast.
Evelyn, we've also heard of some patients who have this buffet syndrome. You know, they want to like give it a chance, try everything, do everything, even if it's a very small chance of helping. And they claim for all of it, including what may be deemed as certain unnecessary procedures. Do they then drive up insurance premiums?
Definitely. That is what we have seen, right? In the past decade or so, essentially, it's the MediShield Life Integrated Shield plans that's the main tool to finance hospitalization expenses and expensive outpatient treatments, such as that for cancer treatments. So like what Gina has mentioned, this main plans actually can finance up to 90% of the medical cost. And if people have a rider, this bill can be entirely paid by the plans that they have. But because of this kind of buffet as charged feature of such plans, the claims experience of the insurance companies has increased exponentially. That led on to big jumps in the premiums, which then led on to all these concerns about, you know, whether premiums can be sustainable over the long term, especially as one grows older. And that's where all these changes that we see in these recent years come in to help to curb the escalating cost.
Is there a big difference between public and private hospitals? And Gina, when you were looking at it, you were fortunate enough to have enough coverage to allow you to visit a private hospital. But much of what we're talking about, the limits have been set, and these are based on subsidized prices at public hospitals. So does that mean that typical patient does not have the option to go to a private hospital?
Yes, you're absolutely right. These limits have been set based on cost of drugs to public hospitals. And a lot of the price negotiations surround getting the best prices for public hospitals. So private oncologists get drugs at higher prices. And it's up to them. They can negotiate with pharma to bring these drugs down. That is a separate process. To answer your question with regards to coverage, if you have a rider, and you can see since April 1st, insurers now have to cover drugs only on the cancer drug list. Unless you have a rider, then you get coverage outside to a certain amount, right? But if you don't have a rider and you just have an integrated plan, these insurance companies have coverages of 2 to 5 times above the MediShield Life coverage. So now with that amount of coverage, potentially you may be able to still avail yourself to the cost of drugs in private practice as well. So those avenues are still there. The question is, will this bring down the cost of cancer care in private and overall help healthcare in Singapore, you know, curtail the spiraling costs? And I think the answer may be yes.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, Gina, when you were looking at the options that were available to you?
My coverage was sufficient for me to go to a private, but I didn't choose that route because long term, I believe that I would need something that's more sustainable. And that's why I went for a public hospital care. There is actually a thyroid cancer support group on Facebook, and I have been exchanging information with the other members. If I'm now to go to Raffles Hospital, for example, to receive my radioactive iodine treatment, I think it would have been a different cost that may be out of this world for me at this point in time.
Right.
And even if, let's say, the insurance does cover for this occurrence of cancer, what if future treatments, I can't afford it anymore? So that has always been a nagging point for me. And that's why public healthcare was my first choice all along.
So Evelyn, what would you tell people like Gina who are concerned about the sustainability and the long-term costs? Because it's true, it could come back again. And do certain companies sort of say it's a one-off thing? And in that sense, should all of us then be maxing out our insurance, getting a rider, making sure we have the full coverage for everything just in case?
It's really about what is your need versus your affordability. First thing first is what's the healthcare expectations? Especially when you're younger, you may feel that, oh, I want to have the option to go to a private hospital because the premiums may be more affordable. It's easier to downgrade than to upgrade because Shield Plan is a medical plan. So it's a function of what's your health, your insurability, what's your health condition, whether you have any pre-existing conditions. So from that standpoint, we think in terms of like, do I want to have options to choose doctors? Because if you are at C ward and B2 ward, right, I don't think you can choose your doctors. Even in restructured hospitals, only I think A ward and B1, I think. A1, right? Then you can choose. When you're in that situation, maybe talking to friends, support group and all that, and then you kind of get referrals or introduction of certain doctors, you want to choose those doctors. Then if you want to have that option, or like I said, you want to have that privacy or your own room, then that's A ward. And then you said, okay, I may want to, again, also have the option to go to doctors that in private practice. Then that one, no choice. You really have to kind of like go for a private plan.
That sounds a bit of a luxury to a certain extent. So if we talk about the basic needs, then would you say what we have is adequate to cover most of us?
Definitely. If you're looking for restructured hospital, I mean, all your CDL and all that is all covered in that sense. Whatever your IP plans and your MediShield Life, it will be adequate. If let's say the patient is just going for a C ward at restructured hospital, whatever cancer treatment that they go through there will be likely fully covered. So other than that 10%, but the bulk of it will be covered. So in terms of affordability, we have it. The restructured hospital is very good. It's just for people who want to have the options and all that, you want to choose doctors.
Okay.
Yeah, then they have to pay for it.
So if I was put this question to all of you, do you feel that what we have, the pricing in our current hospital system, the insurance that we have, the support that we have, is there enough to adequately care for us? Do you feel that it's too expensive? Do you feel that it's enough for what we're paying in that sense? I'm getting what I need to meet my needs at that point in time.
If you look at it and compare our healthcare system with its current level of coverage with other healthcare systems from OECD, high-income countries. Firstly, in terms of cancer drug list coverage, we have one of the best. It's far more than Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United Kingdom in terms of reimbursement. So if you are a patient in Singapore who has no money to pay for Shield plans, you are fully covered only by MediShield Life and are happy with getting C or B2 class coverage in terms of admissions, inpatient admissions and supportive care investigations, actually, you will get a very high standard of care when compared to similar countries elsewhere in the world. And if you can afford to pay for integrated plans, which I would highly recommend, you don't need the rider, at least have an IP, you would get an even higher level of coverage and care, which will meet, you know, your needs and also give you some level of comfort if you talk about A-class care in a restructured hospital. From that perspective, I think we have it pretty well covered here. Of course, if you want to compare with the ideal situation of having that buffet of options and walking into a private hospital and seeing whichever doctor you want, that will obviously come at a cost. But that cost will have to come from that individual who has to pay for that riders, which will not be subsidized by the government. But I think that's fair. I think as long as basic level of care is covered and it's provided at a very high quality that enables you access to drugs that will help you. See, there are a lot of drugs out there that may not be very helpful or useful with marginal benefits, and those drugs are not covered in this list. And there's good reason for that. But, you know, when you have cancer, it is a struggle, right? Like you run out of options, you've used 3-4 lines, you're still young, you're fighting hard, and you'll try to hold on to hope. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are other means. We have clinical trials, we have molecular tumor boards that can help you find something suitable that won't, you know, burn a hole in your pocket. So those options are available in restructured hospitals. It's still not a dead end.
And that is very good news indeed. Gina, when you look back at your situation, would you have any advice for someone who might be kind of experiencing what you just went through?
Yeah, assess your situation and do not limit yourself to just private hospital options. So far, there has been challenges along the way in the hospital that I'm visiting, given that it's a public hospital setting. Of course, there will be staffing issues. There may be confusion over the schedule to visit the doctors. But at the end of the day, I must say that the care and medical attention given has been very, very good, even though it's a public hospital. Do not stereotype it as something that is secondary, and do not think that we are not there in terms of the care that is given. I would say that my entire experience has been so good. I really enjoy going to visit the doctor, even though that shouldn't be the case. But every time that there was a question, the medical team was there to help to answer. The nurses were there to assist, and everybody was all hands on board to ensure that the patient was well informed, or even if not at that point in time, there were answers to the questions. So I really appreciate this. And my advice is really, yes, get your riders, look through your coverage, make sure that you are able to make a choice by having a private class coverage, if possible. If not, yes, we are already receiving enough care.
Well, thank you so much. Cancer is a complex disease and one that seems to be likely among us for many more years to come. And in the unfortunate event you do fall ill, the hope is that you can get the treatment you require. Cost should never be a stumbling block. To be sick is one thing, and to have to choose between receiving treatment or putting food on the table for your family, that is something none of us ever want to have to encounter. We hope this episode has shed a bit more light on that and given you a better idea of how to manage the journey from a cost perspective. And if you have found this episode helpful, please feel free to share it with others too. The team behind this podcast is Jacqueline Chan, Joanne Chan, Tiffany Ang, Saya Nguyen, and Crispina Robert. And I'm Stephen Chia, signing off.